It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Musical genius, and I'm not afraid to say it. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another special presentation from the Radlegen Broadcasting Network. I'm your host for the evening, Robert Winfrey, and thank you also very much for joining us. We appreciate it. Tonight, we are kind of continuing our semi-weekly informal get-together mishmash, reviewing some of the movies that have come out this year. So, again, thanks. This week, the one that came out last weekend, the big blockbuster, X-Men Days of Future Past, is going to be dissected by the three of us. And, well, again, the three of us. I'm not here alone. I've got the same guys as last time, same panelists. I'm not going to introduce them from their various states and associate said states with various anatomical portions. Apparently, it made Mark uncomfortable. You big baby. But okay. All right, so let's go ahead and get into this. First of all, let's go ahead and start with Mark. Mark Radulich is here. He's got some precious few moments to himself while he wanted to devote it to us instead of sleeping. I don't know. Apparently his kid's already on a decent sleep schedule. So, how you doing, Mark?
I don't want your suffering! I don't want your future!
Okay. Well, you know, given that you're older than me, doesn't that just kind of make that redundant?
Fine. Say your line.
Okay. What, you actually want me to quote the movie? I'm going to kill this bit now.
No!
Over and over.
Damn it! I sent you a text on Facebook. I just said, ask me what is it that I do want. I apparently don't want your suffering, and I don't want your future. Well, what do you want?
Okay, what do you want?
Now, you... Well, I wanted to say... Well, Captain No-Cell, what I was going to say was, I want a rock, but forget it now.
Oh, that would have been nice. You should have told me the whole bit. I love Twisted Sister. I would have gone with that. I would have remembered my line properly.
Hang on, Pat. this will not stand. Pat, this is the exact message I sent to Robert. Introduce me. Let me do a bit, then ask, well, what do you want? I just said, I don't want your suffering. I don't want your future.
Okay,
what
okay.
What would have been the next line, Pat? No. What would have been the next line, Pat?
What do you want?
What do you want?
Rock of ages, still rolling.
All right.
Oh, good boy.
Now. Thank you.
All right. And
I was in more of a Def Leppard mood than Twisted Sister.
That's
Clearly.
Fine. It all works.
Well, not all of it, but both of those options do. All right. And you heard him very briefly there. He is the most talented singer on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network. And still, I don't know if he's still our biggest draw, but Pat Mullen is here with us as well. How you doing,
I'm
Pat?
So excited to finally be on a podcast where I can say positive things and be excited about what we're talking about.
Yeah, good for you.
Call the papers, everyone. Call the newspapers. Call your parents. Go to church. It's the apocalypse.
It will be in 2015, apparently.
Did you pick that one up? Well, hang on. You picked that up, but you missed the inference, the twist, the twist, you bastard.
That you were giving cues to.
I'm sure you said, I don't want your future. Waka, waka, waka. Would that have helped?
It might have. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm sorry. I screwed up the opening bit. My apologies.
All right. I'm getting over it now.
Are you? Because I'm going to have to ask you to speak to Pat for me, because I'm refusing to acknowledge his existence at the moment.
Ah, oh, boo.
No, I kid. All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into this. However, because Mark didn't abandon me this week, I am starting with him on all of these questions. So, Mark, this was it had a great opening weekend. As far as, from a financial standpoint, X-Men Days of Future Past, again, is the movie we're discussing. Like 90-some-odd million dollars over the 3 days? Or was that 110. My numbers have been corrected. We're at 110 when we factor in Memorial Day, apparently. So, monster opening. Hooray, the X-Men still have some life left in their legs. I don't know when you saw it. I know when I saw it. I kind of know when Pat saw it. But I just want your... with a bit of brevity, please, because I do want to, move this along. But your overall impressions of the movie itself, and just to anyone out there listening, very briefly, I know the movie came out last weekend. If you're listening to this, be aware, we're going to spoil things. You've been warned. There's my warning. All right, so what about this movie really kind of made you enjoy? Because I know you enjoyed it. We all enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely enjoyed the movie. I ranked the four summer blockbusters that I've seen so far. This came number two to Captain America's number one, The Winter Soldier. I thought that, and here's where I'm probably going to anger a lot of the comic nerds, but I felt that if you're like my wife and you went into this cold and you have absolutely no connection to the comic book and you have minimal connection to the previous movies, It was a great movie about people that happen to have superpowers. So let's forget 100 years of X-Men history for just a moment, and you just watch what happened, and all you need to know is what happened in First Class.
Even then, only from a cursory standpoint.
Well, it told you who the characters were, and what, you know, and why James McAvoy is punching Michael Fassbender in the face the first time they see each other. So as long as you've seen First Class, that's all you really needed. And it was a great movie about people and their relationships, and you know, it deals a little bit with people's fears and prejudices, and I thought it handled all of those balls in the air very, very well. This was not the most fun I've ever had at the movies kind of a thing. I still say that was Captain America. But I thought that, you know, when I looked at the three comic movies that have come up, and the fourth one was Godzilla, which was not necessarily a comic book, but I know it's been a comic book, but it didn't start off that way. I felt like these were better drawn characters than Spider-Man, but the movie was less fun than Captain America. And that's about where I stand with it.
All right. That's a fair point. This was, I'll go ahead and give a couple of things that I really enjoyed about it. First of all, this was the first movie of, I think, any of the X-Men, debatably First Class, that I felt it was about the circumstance and the people involved as opposed to focusing in. I mean, look, we had a couple of those that were Wolverine featuring the X-Men. I mean, that's just kind of how they played out. And we actually, everyone was a fully fleshed out character. This was more about the circumstance and the situation than about, let's all follow Hugh Jackman. Not that I'm complaining.
Right.
I like Hugh Jackman, but I get what you're saying with that, and that was one of the things I liked about it. Okay, so, Pat, I want to go to you for this one. Okay, you liked it. I mean, you've been, you know, you didn't like Spider-Man. You've had a, you know, you just said it yourself. You're excited to talk about positive things, so let's go there. Your favorite things about this movie. Give me, like, three.
Firstly, this is Bryan Singer looking at the two X-Men movies that have followed his initial two efforts and saying, what did you do to my beautiful baby that I developed, and correcting all the right that once went wrong?
Oh, yeah. My brother, who I saw this with the first time, mentioned that this was a brilliant way to reboot a franchise without actually rebooting it. We have canonized time travel.
That's actually been the most common statement about this movie, is that they retconned every other motion picture before it, with the exception of First Class, and rebooted the franchise with the exact same actors. It's pretty brilliant. I don't know of any other circumstances that have happened.
Yeah, that was genius to have, you know, Wolverine play Sam Beckett and just fix and put right what once went wrong. My second favorite part of the three, I would have to say that it, and you kind of touched on this, it doesn't become a Wolverine narrative. They really develop the integral relationships between the characters involved. And my third favorite part is Peter Dinklage as Bolivar Trask, who I thought was a fantastic prick of a villain.
You're supposed to say Halle Berry dying.
You know, what's great about the Dinklage performance is that you forget he's a midget. And
yeah.
I actually read this in one of the reviews, which I thought was great, is there's no nod to it. There's no, you know, there's no winking at the audience. Honestly, other than his facial features and the fact that sometimes you see him standing next to somebody else who's, you know, a full-grown adult, and those are the only times you're ever reminded that he's a physical midget. But outside of that, it's not even ancillary. It has nothing to do with the story. It's just he's just an actor playing a part, and it was brilliant. It really was. It was brilliant. And I like the fact that he was understated. You know, one thing about, you know, it's funny. I was listening to Robert's Everyone Loves a Bad Guy on Captain America, and there aren't too many bad – you're welcome – on Captain America. And one of the things you were lamenting is the lack of sort of the, you know, the twirly mustache reveling in their own evil bad guys that you see sometimes in Disney cartoons.
I just want a villain who is unrepentantly evil. It's an important contrast.
Well, the thing of it is that there's none of that in this movie. That was
there
isn't. You know, Dinklage is responding to what he feels is an absolute threat to humanity. And let's be realistic. If suddenly a bunch of people showed up on this, you know, on the planet, it could do, you know, and were practically immortal and could do godlike things, we'd freak the fuck out.
Oh, we already did. They're called North Koreans.
Well, all right then. But no, I one of the things I've enjoyed about the X-Men movies, and this is the one thing they've gotten right, even where things went terribly, terribly wrong, the last stand, and that is, they are honest reaction. They are honest representations of how human beings would react to these circumstances. It's a little bit different than the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the Avengers, where they've only really reacted to the Hulk. Everybody else is fine. You know? Like, ah, guy running around, super soldier, he's fine. Northgard, he's fine. You know, guy running around in a suit of armor, he's fine. You know, none of this seems to bother anybody. But that's not how that's not what would happen in reality. And that's one of the things I've really liked about the X-Men movies.
Okay. I know you talked with one of the casual heroes, Gavin Napier, and he had a list of complaints, and there are other people out there who have their complaints. And if you've got, I know you have the list, Mark. So if you could, I would like to just, you know, let's go over a couple of these and see if it's a valid, if any of these criticisms are legitimately valid, or if this is, I hate to say fanboy whining, but that's the term I'm going to use.
All right, if you'll permit me, Robert, I want to read through all of these first, and then we kind of go back through them. And if you need to repeat them, I will. Now, with apologies to Gavin Napier of thecasualheroes.com, this was a private conversation that we had, and it was basically, it started off with, want to argue about X-Men because I have a laundry list of complaints. And I told him I wanted to use these in a podcast, preferably with him on it, but, you know, schedules being what they are. Now, mind you, this was like mid-nap, so I woke up and got like tons of messages from him with what was wrong with this movie. The Sentinels were all Nimrods. That's not right. Quicksilver had a Walkman 7 years before it was invented. His headphones were from about 2012. That's not how Bishop's powers work. You can't pause Pong. This would have made a much better Everything Wrong with video from CinemaSins. He doesn't need a – continuing on with Bishop. He doesn't need a gun to make them work, and he doesn't explode when he overloads. Rogue and Iceman holding hands should turn her into a popsicle and him into agony. The whole Magneto-JFK thing was absurd. It was a decent action movie, but it didn't excite me. Hoping Jackman gets his wish, which is that Marvel – and Fox play nice, and you get a Wolverine versus Hulk type movie. Oh, wait, this gets better. Kitty Pryde doesn't have psychic powers. My comment to that was, I didn't have problems with all of his movies. Seldom get the comics 100% right. He'd settle for half right. So he feels like this was a poor representation of the comic book.
She's not represented in the movie as having psychic powers.
She has some sort of pseudo mental time travel powers, I will attest. This is my problem with them. It's not that they're not canon in the comics, which they're not. Her ability is phasing, and we all know that. My issue with it is that it comes out of nowhere at you in the movie, where the last time we saw her, her soul abilities were phasing. And maybe you can say, yes, she developed other abilities along the way, but they really just gloss over that, and all of a sudden she's able to do these projections, these, you know, mental time projections of someone that allow them to kind of be in places they weren't and rewrite history a little bit. And it's more a convenient plot device than anything else. It's not something that was actually written well, or for anybody who paid attention in the previous movies, it's not something addressed.
Well,
hang on. Let me briefly say this, my interpretation of what she was able to do. Because what Kitty does is phase out of sync with quantum reality so that she can pass through things, she's able to project that into your conscious mind, and your consciousness then becomes then comes out of sync with the normal time stream, and she can project your consciousness back. That was my interpretation.
Okay. In the comic book, she's the one that goes back in time, and I don't
Nobody
remember...
Nobody wants to see Ellen Page on screen for that long.
I don't either.
And this is another thing that came up from people where you know, well, it's supposed to be this. Well, then how are you going to get Hugh Jackman in the movie to sell this movie because he's the one real bankable star of this franchise? I understand it's not – but does anybody really give a shit about Kitty Pryde going back in time except for a couple of neckbeards and, you know, a couple of really devout Jewish kids who want, you know, their Jewish characters at the forefront of things? Kitty Pryde's just not that interesting of a character.
Quick question. Did either one of you see the article I reposted from, Slate.com that's supposed to be Kitty Pryde writing to the people of who made the X-Men movie going, why did you take away my role?
Oh, jeez.
Well, because they cast Ellen Page as you, and she's not believable in anything approaching an action sequence, and you're not a well-known star, you're not a well-known character, and you need something like that to sell the film.
Look, at least the explanation they give in the movie with Wolverine is feasible.
Hang on. I understand that Juno won a lot of awards, okay?
Yeah.
We all loved Ellen Page and Juno.
Did it?
I didn't.
But nobody wants to see Juno leading an action movie. She was great in the role she played. She got to hold Hugh Jackman's head, and, you know, and she was a plot device to get the movie going. You guys are absolutely right. For people to... I mean, I don't understand why in the comic books they chose Kitty Pryde to go back. I understand Wolverine wasn't as popular of a character at the time.
Because Chris Claremont really likes Kitty Pryde.
Well, let's be fair. She was actually well written as far as that goes in the comics.
But, you know, I know, and I won't make a big deal of it this time, but let us all remember what I said in the last podcast, which are movies are not comic books. And, again, as much as everyone would have loved to, you know, would love to see Juno in a starring action role, that's not what's going to sell tickets. Hugh Jackman sells tickets to these things. And for an example of this, we're 5 minutes into the movie, and you get a tasteful shot of his buttocks for the ladies.
You know, that's not just for the ladies. I'd say any one with leanings.
Oh?
And
anyone
with leanings, not me.
Okay. I don't know where you're going with that. Sorry.
You're ignoring the homosexual portion of our listening audience.
You're right. A tasteful shot of Hugh Jackman's buttocks for anyone whose predilections like lean that way.
Or who just really likes squats and what they do.
Indeed. So, enough about Hugh Jackman's ass.
I will briefly say Bishop didn't develop. He didn't blow up because he was overpowered. He also blew up because he was being fried by three different energy blasts at the same time.
Hang on a second. I don't even want to get into some of the nitpicky things that Gavin came up with. And I love Gavin to death, but I'm not going to go into my Big Bang Theory rant. But this is what drives me crazy about comic book fans or fans of any of the sci-fi and fantasy realm is, and this is what I started screaming about in the last podcast, you know, with Tom Bombadil and all that. When you go to make a movie, you need to have, you know, a tight script. There are other things you need to consider, and you're trying to sell this thing to the widest possible audience. So, and the thing of it is that while you as a fan of the comic book may want to see certain things come to life, you sort of have to take it for granted that.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
They're not going to do 100% of the comic book. They're going to do what makes sense in the film. And for the most part, no one gives a shit why Bishop blew up. He just needed to die. They all needed to die to get to the point where, you know, to get to the point where they're racing against time, and Professor X is almost killed right before, spoiler, you know,
the good guys
Professor
win.
X in the 1970s saves the day. And
I'm amazed that anyone gives a shit about Bishop.
Yeah, well, it's a whole other comic book conversation.
He was a wee bit obnoxious and a bit of an ancillary character.
And he had a mullet. And it wasn't even a Jerry Curl mullet, and he was black. How does that even make sense?
I've seen plenty.
He's from the future.
Yeah, and if he was really from the future, we all know that mullet would have been chopped by 96, don't we?
But do you guys see what
I don't know.
Could we not focus on the black mullet for just a moment? Do you guys see what I'm saying? Like, there's no point in getting yourself all worked up over what I feel are not, you know, I get worked up over things that are inconsistent with the movie's own universe. If you've never met Bishop before, you've never, you know, it would have been inconsistent, for example, if they had taken Storm and suddenly Storm isn't doing weather powers anymore. Now she's shooting, you know, now she's the one that can phase in and out of time. Like, if Storm was the one who sent Wolverine backwards, that would have been a clucky moment for me, and I would have been like, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make no sense. Because they've already established that she's a weather character power
okay.
person.
I got you. So were there any other major complaints in his list that you felt should be addressed?
Well, I mean, this will kind of get us to talk about Quicksilver for a moment. He had some complaints about some things out of time and place with Quicksilver, with the wall in the headphones.
That's a somewhat legitimate complaint.
I think it's a legitimate complaint. My only issue is that does it really matter in the narrative?
No. It's
a very minor point, and I don't think anybody gave a shit about Quicksilver either.
I
thought he was
You're not alone, but you're probably in the minority as far as that goes. A lot of people really thought he stole every scene he was in.
Yeah.
Really?
I'll tell you what. When his scene was over, when they got Magneto out of the Pentagon, that's when the movie stopped being fun. It became a very dour, serious movie after that. And I felt like that was kind of the high point of the movie for me. I mean, and that's not a complaint. I mean, it is what it is. But this is also why I said I didn't have as much fun with this movie as I did with the Bourne Identity America. That's the last time you have fun in that movie is him running around the kitchen and knocking bullets out of place and kind of, you know, screwing with the guards and stuff like that. It was a very funny scene. It was a very well-shot scene, and it told you – his little bit there told you a lot about his character and personality without, you know, them having to do any dialogue. And my only complaint is that that's the last time you'll see Quicksilver in this movie other than a shot to him at the end that was utterly meaningless. So, I missed him in the rest of the movie. I felt like he could have brought some much-needed levity.
It's a serious storyline. Yeah,
he's not a character. The ironic thing is, he's not a character who brings levity. He's always Mr. Uber serious to the point where he became an abusive spouse at one point during his comic run. He's kind of not a fun character by any means. In a lot of ways, he sucks.
You're absolutely right about that. Quicksilver in the comic book was a very the Scarlet Witch was the fun one until she went insane.
Even then, crazy people are fun.
She caused the Avengers to fall apart. God damn it. But no, you're right. Quicksilver sucked. Quicksilver, I thought, worked better as a villain than he did as a hero. But this is not the same Quicksilver now, is it, Pat? That Quicksilver was, I think, 110 years old, it looked like, in the comic books. This one's a teenager.
He is a teenager. I will address the Walkman issue. It's not pictured well, but if you remember during the early 70s, they developed these big old headphones that would have an antenna coming out of them where you could actually listen to AM and FM radio on it.
I recall those. I wasn't alive, but I know what you're talking about.
So it's not a good representation of that, but those did exist. So it's not as though the headphones themselves were completely unfathomable at that point in time. But the Walkman itself is a bad thing.
Okay. No, he had headphones. Never mind. It's nitpicking over stuff that doesn't
Are we really dinging the movie because of the Walkman? Is that where we're at?
I'm just saying. I'm defending that there was an invention that was feasible in, as that at that point in time, but it's really a completely minor detail that really doesn't matter in the least.
Okay. My only major gripe with this movie is purely from my own personal perspective, and because I really wanted Michael Fassbender and Ian McKellen to be on the same screen at the same time.
It wasn't their story, though. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
I know it wasn't. I'm just saying, and I really admit, had they shoehorned it in, I might be sitting here complaining about how they shoehorned that in.
Mm-hmm.
But
it would have been cool to see how he developed an Irish accent into an English accent.
He was better about keeping it under control this time. That was my biggest laugh from First Class, was he puts on the helmet and becomes Irish.
That was a special magic power.
Can I bring up my major gripe as far as anything that, you know, not narrative sensically?
Go ahead.
Okay, so Hank McCoy, Beast, develops this serum that allows you to suppress mutant powers and their, you know, deformities that may occur because of them. Why was Professor X not paralyzed anymore when he was not using his powers?
Actually, the serum that he had developed was supposed to be a treatment for his spine. That was why he was able to walk. And taking the serum negatively affected his DNA and suppressed his powers. It wasn't designed to suppress his powers. It was designed to let him walk again.
So by accident, he took this serum that suppressed... He created a serum that suppressed powers, including his own when he used it. But there was nothing else that happened to him as far as anything dealing with his spine.
I don't know.
You would think there would be some other type of effect from that. That's my issue with that. And I understand it played well into the conclusion, the actual serum. But again, you know, shouldn't this lead to other questions? Like, how was he able to not be detected by, you know, Trask's people or whatever, his followers? And wouldn't they rather develop that at a certain point, an anti-mutant serum, that they can just inject people with rather than have these machines that can go haywire?
Well, hang on. Let's go back. Okay, so the plot of this thing in the 1973 storyline was that the school fell apart due to the Vietnam War, which I thought was brilliant, by the way. I actually enjoyed without
a lot more brilliant than Kennedy being claimed to be a mutant.
We'll talk
for
about
the love
that.
Of all that's holy, that bullet did not curve. The myth, this is a very brief... Side tangent, I'll be brief about this.
Okay,
the
Oliver Stone, hit
not,
it.
Did not curve. When that report was released and those conclusions reached, nobody assumed, first of all, they didn't know how the ammunition fired from that particular rifle behaved. It doesn't fragment, it actually starts tumbling, leading it to not be as fluid from an aerodynamic standpoint. And they didn't credit Oswald with all three shots. The bullet does not curve. They were looking at holes made by two different rounds and assuming one round had made them.
I'm a U.S. governor, and I saw that there were three shots fired.
Look, anyone who's looked into that knows that it's ridiculous to claim that the bullet was magic. There were a lot of inaccurate conclusions reached and a lot of inaccurate science used to reach them. My rant
every
is
time,
over.
Every time the conversation comes up, all I can hear is Kevin Costner doing his magic bullet theory from JFK.
Well, all I know is that when the government tells you that they're going to protect you, be ready for the loss of your freedoms and be ready to tell people that Hulk Hogan's going to talk about your union plan.
Thank you, Jesse Ventura.
Do we have to thank Jesse Ventura for that?
So, leaving alone JFK, the mutant, and the magic bullet theory for just a moment, and getting back to the point that I was making...
Because they don't want you to know the truth.
Oh, Jesus. Will you stop? See, you're doing Jesse, I'm doing Gorilla Monsoon. Did you get that?
So, wait, does that make me Bobby the Brain?
It most certainly does not, sir. You would be Lord Alfred Hayes.
Stetson, for promotional consideration has been paid for by the following.
Well, now listen, Lord Alfred Winfrey. Now, here's the deal, right? They used the Vietnam War very well in this movie. You know, they didn't, instead of commenting on it, which I thought would have been a bit draggy and a bit preachy, Instead, they just said, look, it affected people. Whether you were for the war or against the war, it tore families apart. It took people out of their home that didn't necessarily want to go to war, and it brought many of them back very damaged people. So the thing of it is that the school existed and was thriving, and then the Vietnam War pretty much killed it. And with the school gone and him never able to get Mystique back in the fold and the loss of his legs, Professor Xavier Charles cracked. He just broke. He was an absolute shell of a man. And so with everything gone, he didn't see the point in continuing to use his powers, and that became a lucky side effect of using the serum to walk. Now, your question as to why didn't, A, the government find out about him, and, B, want to go after his serum, which cures mutant powers, apparently, he was quiet. And essentially, and without doing it directly, and I was talking to Melissa about this, for those listening for the first time, Melissa being my wife, we were talking about the allusions to heroin. Because you can't do a movie about the 70s without alluding to heroin in some way. But I thought the allusions to heroin were great, and I thought that was sort of the purpose of the serum was to, because if it really had been heroin, boy, what a dark movie this would have been. Then you would have had Jim Morrison in it and a woman saying, did you really put your dick in this woman? And it would have been terrible.
It does, though, help to explain why Wolverine was having unprotected sex because of his healing factor.
Also
yeah, that's
true.
That's
you don't have to worry true. About any of that crap.
In any
that's
case,
like
the
a get-out-of-jail-free card, man.
The government would have had no reason to go after Professor X because he was laying quiet, sitting in a dark room.
No, but I'm not...
I think
that point in time. I'm saying, like, you know, considering that this movie is taking place between the past and the future, and it's revealed when the Sentinel prototype is going after McCoy... and he injects himself with this serum to not be detected, after he's clearly been shown as a mutant, wouldn't that raise some questions? How is he able to do that? Like, what are these needles in his leg? Like, why? You know what I mean? Wouldn't they try to go that route, too? And, you know, wouldn't there be consequences felt from that, too, in the future? It seems kind of short-sighted.
Well, look, briefly, hang on.
A couple of things. One, if Logan doesn't go back, they never have that interaction. There will never be an interaction between a Sentinel and a young Hank McCoy trying to stick himself with needles for self-preservation. So that is an entirely new thing right then and there. Go ahead, Robert.
Two things for that. First of all, nobody else saw it. He was still laying in like the bed of that the back seat of the car when he stabbed himself. No one else saw it except for that Sentinel, which was then summarily disassembled by Magneto when it charged after him.
All right, that was the second point that I was going to make, which was, maybe after the fact, you know, yeah, they're watching game footage, whatever. But the whole Sentinel program was disassembled, and now what's great about the end of Days of Future Past is we're for the first time in this entire franchise living in a world which is more or less accepting of mutants. You know, there's a Reagan-esque trust but verify thing kind of set up there. So
yeah, and when you and your buddies were smoking pot and listening to damn Beatle albums, me and my friends were up to our knees in rice paddies while you all wanted to hold hands singing "We Are the World."
What's that from?
I believe it's a variant on a speech Sam Kinison gave him back to school.
Yes,
okay.
That's correct. do we really need to talk about the JFK thing? I mean, do either one of you just want to do 5 minutes panning it so we can move on? Since no one seems to, I thought it was a throwaway line. I don't know why everyone's so uptight about it.
I didn't know it was a thing. I laughed at it the first time because you know my thing was you know Kennedy gets lionized by. You know, all the people from that era who had a liberal bent. Oh, sure, we'll make him a mutant, too. That was my thought process. That was my laugh
My thought it. Process was they can't get away with casting a black man as John Kennedy, so they're going to make him a mutant.
How about this? How about in the narrative of the story, they can't get away with their bad guy killing a president, so they don't have him do it. They have him try to save the president. Why would he save the president? Because he's a mutant. Ta-da! Why are we overthinking this?
I know. It's again, it was a...
Because they don't want you to know the truth. How many times do I have to explain this?
Ah, shut up.
Stop.
Before I break your hip, old man. All right.
I was a governor and a Navy SEAL.
You're also a drug addict, a roid user,
and a
very sad, broken-down old man. All right, now that I've offended everyone.
On this podcast, God forbid.
It wasn't just a couple. It wasn't on our last episode where I like proudly proclaimed that I hate everyone equally or something to that effect.
Apparently there's a little more of a hate on for a former Minnesota governor than we anticipated.
All right, listen, Salivant, Mr. Mullen, you like the movie. I'm going to ask you guys both this. I'm going to take the reins away from Robert for just a minute here. I want to talk about something that was very meaningful to me about this. This ostensibly retconned, and people are, like, if you read the literature on this, the articles, they retconned The Last Stand as if X-Men and then X2 United We Stand, or whatever the hell it was called, are still canon, but they're not. If you look at how that movie ends, if you look at the way Days of Future Past ends, there's no way it links up anymore, because the whole history of the X-Men is that Magneto, you know, splits from Charles Xavier, forms the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and goes attacking people. That was the whole premise of the first movie. The way they've set this up, Mystique has finally kind of gone her own way, and she's no longer at war with Charles Xavier. So she's not part of the Brotherhood. He may not have even gone to form the Brotherhood, which means there's no first movie. Not only that, but if just to bring up X-Men Origins for a moment and let us all bow our heads in shame, he'll never meet William Stryker again. At the end of the movie, Mystique sort of claims his body. That was what they alluded to with the shot of her eyes as they're pulling him out of the water. Clearly, he will at some point meet Professor X, and Professor X will, you know, fix him well enough that he can work in the school, which means none of the other movies, including the last one that just came out, The Wolverine, ever existed. They can't possibly exist. They've changed way too much in 1973. Pat, what do you think about all that?
No, it's true. But first of all, the one of the big things where people immediately took notice was that he had bone claws instead of his adamantium claws. Questions will arise in future movies. If he does have the adamantium claws, well, how did that come to be? Based on the fact that they've greatly altered the events in between when that happened and the future. So now people are very happy because it retconned The Last Stand out of continuity, and they damn well should be. However, they've ignored the fact that because the second movie was excellent, first movie, okay, a good starting point. Those two movies now don't exist in the exact entirety the way we've seen them. Maybe some events play out from them similarly. Maybe some things remain unchanged. But there are definite changes that will occur between all of that. And people kind of seem to be aloof towards that because of the negative response that was so heavy to The Last Stand, that's all they care about not happening as opposed to the first two movies.
Robert, your witness?
No, I agree with Pat. I mean, yeah, they changed everything that had happened up until that point, and that's... anyone who's just thinking, oh, yay, they retconned The Last Stand, well, no, they did everything else, too. Look at it logically. Not that I'm not glad we got rid of The Last Stand, although, unfortunately, this does mean James Marsden and his horrible version of Cyclops.
You're a dick.
Look,
Cyclops
hang on.
Cyclops didn't pay any waste anyway until the last 2 years of comic writing.
Look, I'm not saying Cyclops is a great character or anything. James Marsden does not play him properly, and more importantly, he's not written properly. Because
they also miscast by having his significant other being a woman who looks old enough to be his mother.
Aww, she's an attractive
gal.
Be
nice to Femke.
Femke
Jensen. That doesn't necessarily mean she's an unattractive girl or doesn't look good for her age. It's more that he looks 12 compared to her.
Femke Jensen is a handsome woman.
Well, let's also be fair. James Marsden looks 12 no matter what he does.
Can we just say right now that when 20th Century Fox bought the license for the X-Men, I'm sure the meeting went like this. How do we get that Wolverine guy that's so popular? Well, he's part of the X-Men. What the fuck are the X-Men? What are the Wolverine's team of buddies? Yeah, whatever. Just give us money. We're really broke here at Marvel. Okay, whatever. And then they sat down to write this movie about, you know, Wolverine. They said, no. You have to do the X-Men. All of them. Okay, we'll get this guy to play Cyclops. And, oh, Halle Berry won an Oscar. Is there a black girl in this? Because we need her in this movie. I tell you, that's how it went. No
I
one can sit shit at Fox about any of these characters.
I don't dispute your claims. That's probably about how it went.
Motherfuck. Oh, sorry.
I know that wasn't a reaction to anything we're talking about, but that's damn funny.
No, this is the Eastern Conference NHL Finals.
Okay. I don't think anyone at 20th Century Fox gave two shits or a fuck about Cyclops. You know, maybe they cared about Jean Grey as the love interest for Wolverine.
Which is, to my mind, the biggest problem with that whole relationship is that, I don't like Cyclops. I've never liked Cyclops. I understand him, and I get where he comes from, and as much as generally speaking, if you're a fan of comics, you fall a little bit into the outcast category, and Wolverine falls into he's kind of the loner, he's the gruff guy. You always kind of
root for Randy Savage of comics.
If you want to go that route, okay. You always kind of were rooting for him to get with Jean, but, I mean, the supreme irony is that any time they've been written together, it's hilariously bad for, like, everyone involved.
In any case, the indication seems to be at the end of Days of Future Past that they will find themselves all back in the school again, you know, and they will all meet, and we'll get the happy version of Xavier's school that we all wanted. But the road to get, they've left now open this huge road to getting there, and I think that means we need to talk about. Well, is there anything about the actual narrative of the movie that we want to go through before we hit the secret scene at the end leading to the sequel in 2 years? Pat, I'll go to you first. Sorry, Rob, I'm just taking over the role here.
Sorry.
But, Pat, is there anything else about the narrative, about the conclusion, about the actual the acting, anything at all that you want to talk about before we talk about the secret scene?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think the heavy amount of mystique in the movie that I was worried about didn't come to play, which is good. I understand why she's such an important part in the story, but I'm really glad they kept, Jennifer Lawrence kind of to a minimum for how important her character was, solely because I don't think she's that great of an actress. She just happens to be the it girl at the moment. And rather than try to force her down our throats the way they did with Halle Berry in the early movies, because she was the it girl at the time, they used her as they needed to, which was very refreshing to me and kind of a saving grace. And, you know, I think from the people we expected great performances, we got them. I think from the people we expected less from, they kept to a minimum. And I think overall, it's a very well-told story. It rights a lot of wrongs and corrects a lot of problems that most people have had with the franchise to this point. And it's a good jumping off point for the series to kind of start anew and get back to the points people really felt were its high note in X2.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the ending, because I actually had somewhat of a problem with it. And it's not
okay.
It was bad, but I felt like, you know how there's complaints of, you know, like some people, like we all know the dragon's going to get killed in The Hobbit, right? Is that a spoiler for anyone? Did I ruin
Thorin
that movie for people?
Thorin Oakenshield dies, too.
Yeah.
They bring faggot Samwise Gamgee back, though, in Lord of the Rings for some reason.
It's bringing Black back for the 7th Fast and Furious movie. I don't want to hear any of the other crap.
You know who's not coming back, though? Paul Walker.
So not the point. Anakin Skywalker will become Darth Vader. And the problem with when you know how things are going to end is it becomes a very dicey thing then to have the kind of suspense that you want to give people a full enjoyment of the film. My problem with this was you knew that the conclusion of this had to be that Professor X was going to not tell Mystique what to do, and that suddenly she was going to be woman. You would hear her roar, and she would make the heroic decision to not murder somebody in cold blood. And it was like, all right, we know that's where this is going. That was Professor X's arc. That was Mystique's arc. You would have had to have not known anything about film to not know that was coming. So the only thing that was suspenseful about that whole end sequence was the stuff in the future, which, you know, they're going to live too. But at least, you know, with the Sentinels ripping Cyclops in half and blowing up Bishop and, you know, one by one killing off all the X-Men and just, you know, marching on Professor X, at least, you know, that gave me some degree of suspense while I'm waiting for the situation in 1973 to resolve itself. But I almost found myself impatiently waiting for it. Like, oh, my God, get on with this already. We got it. You know, she's not going to let no man tell her what to do. Got it. She doesn't belong to Magneto or Charles. Got it.
That's why she walks around without a bra.
Exactly. She's a liberated woman, don't you know? But, like, it was like, we got it. It's a well-written movie, but that bit of it was beat to fucking death for me. You know what I mean, Robert?
I see where you're coming from. I'll say this. I felt it drug a little bit. I kind of get what you're saying as far as that at the end. I don't know. It didn't bother me the second time around. And since that's my most recent experience, that's kind of the one I'm drawing on.
Yeah, I honestly, you know, the special effects being what they were, I thought were cool, and you know, I like seeing Magneto drop the stadium around the White House or the Pentagon, whatever it was. You know, I liked all of that. I liked some of the other stuff that you saw there, but once it came down to that little bit of human drama, I felt like it was shallow because you knew this was coming. It had to be. It's like my daughter says, it always has to be. I'm not even kidding about that. When she goes off on me and my wife, she'll just repeat, it always has to be, over and over and over again.
You know, yeah, I see where you're coming from. By the same token, I feel like they could have, with the way some of the narrative was set up, I mean, yeah, it did drug a little bit. I mean, a very minor bit, and I understand where you're coming from, so.
All right. Go ahead, Robert, do you have anything else you want to bring up before we talk about the last scene of the movie?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say was I really felt all of the interpersonal kind of relationships were really well fleshed out. Not just by the writing, but by the acting, by everything. I mean, probably the more I think about this, the more it kind of sticks with me. I'm just what is almost the final sequence in the future between Magneto and Xavier, when Magneto's been struck by the Sentinel piece and he's bleeding out and he's dying, and he looks at Charles and he just says, "You know, all those years we wasted fighting each other. If I could just have a precious few of them back," and it just it felt like they were actually saying goodbye to each other, and I suppose it helps because Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are both awesome. But that the interactions between McAvoy and Fassbender, we all knew were going to be great if you saw First Class. I also really I couldn't put my finger about this whole sequence, but I really liked McAvoy when he tries to use Cerebro, can't do it. He talks with Logan, and then he goes into the future and meets with himself. Just, you know, all of the interplay, but I don't know. I really responded to that whole sequence, and probably my favorite part of the whole movie is encapsulated in those couple of minutes.
Can what I ask about, a question about Michael Fassbender?
If you
yes,
wish.
Let me follow up that, because that I want to ask a question that directly relates to what he just said. What about the interplay between Patrick Stewart and James McAvoy spoke to you? Was it the dialogue? Was it just, did the acting resonate with you in some way? Like dig a little for me. What about that spoke to you?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. If I had to guess, as someone who, I will not even
talk about
it. As someone,
hang on. Let me back. Describe that scene to me. If I hadn't seen the movie, tell me what you saw in that scene.
I don't want to just kind of summarize the plot there because we've all seen it, but I think what speaks to me about that is, as a person who has, I suffer from depression, I did so for many, many years, still do to some degrees, as someone who has abandoned hope voluntarily, seeing him kind of regain it, and watching, you know, what kind of goes on for someone when they're, you know, when you, you know, either you've hit rock bottom or you've just decided that, no, I'm not falling any further. I don't know. I mean, that and, Hans Zimmer.
Follow that up. Don't just drop the thread. I like what you're saying there. Follow that up. You know, you're seeing somebody who has decided he will fall no further and starts to reclaim his life in that one scene. Go ahead.
No, that's pretty much it. That's kind of what speaks to me. And, well, that and I frequently wish that I could, you know, see my younger self just so I could bitch slap the little pain in the ass.
Would you go back in time and say, please, Robert, we need you to hope again?
No, but I might smash myself in the head with a frying pan.
Decidedly different emotional view in that scene.
Let me say this. If I was in my 60s looking back on myself in my 20s or 30s, I might. As someone in my late 20s looking back on me as a 16-year-old, no, it's frying pan.
Please, Robert, you must understand what it is I'm trying to tell you. Dunk! Right
but
in the head.
Something like that, yeah.
Robert, this is the message I have for you. It's the only one you'll understand. Right in the kisser.
All right, so you wanted to move on to the post-credit scene wherein we get a
preview. No, I had a question about Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, Pat, we have to go to Pat first.
Okay, so the Kennedy thing happened in 63. I'm assuming we can go by real time in that event, that it did happen in 63 in the movie as well. Large part of the plot takes place in 1973 in the movie. How do you think they cut Magneto's hair and shaved him?
Well, speaking for somebody who works in the correctional profession, even those in isolation are allowed at least a half an hour to an hour for shower and shave.
I think
but
what you need
they have to use metal objects.
No, you don't.
No, plastic scissors.
Plastic scissors don't get a haircut like that.
Okay, we're back to Bishop's powers don't work that way.
No, because Bishop's black, so we don't care about him.
Rattle into broadcasting, everybody. Who the R stands for racism.
Are
we done with this, or are we really going to have now an in-depth discussion of how this fucker got his hair cut? His head,
I'm just saying it's well-styled, it's close-cropped.
His hair done and his nails did.
I'm saying you can do that with plastic, or at the very least, a high-quality ceramic.
I guess if they can have ceramic firearms, sure.
Those are real. Here's my complaint. My one complaint as far as that goes. Plastic guns are real things, folks. You make them with various polymers. The problem with them is you get two shots at best before the pressures created by discharging a firearm shatter it. That's my only complaint.
So not the point of the movie.
I know. And look, some people are bugged because Bishop's powers don't work that way. I get a minor annoyance when firearms are not accurately depicted. It's a minor thing, and it's just me. I'm not criticizing the movie for it.
Okay. Are you satisfied? Do we need to discuss this in depth?
No, I'm completely satisfied. Now, I love the movie, but there are things in there that I don't think fleshed out fully.
Okay. I don't think Havoc ever gets his due. This is now two movies where Havoc was completely underutilized, and he was awesome in the comics. You know, if we're going to nitpick about shit that bothers us, like a bunch of, you know, characters from the Big
Havoc rocks, and we've seen the last of them.
It's a real shame, because I always wanted to see a big screen representation of him just bullying Scott around.
Well, maybe we will in the next movie. And speaking of
the next movie...
We can hope. Anyway,
no, we can't, according to you.
And speaking of,
well, okay,
we all get frying pans.
I will mock you for your hope, but you can hope.
Anywho, so if you stayed for the end credits, there's an allusion to what the next movie is going to be in two years.
En Sabanur.
Dude, the funniest part about that is, and again, this goes to my point about. This goes to the widest audience possible. My wife and I saw it at, I don't know if in Utah or in New Jersey, they have what's called a Cinebistro, which is a movie theater that's also a restaurant. You go in, there's really comfortable chairs. You order a meal. They bring it to your seat, and then as you're eating, the movie starts.
Yeah, we have this we just call them the dine-in theater.
I need to consider starting that. Sounds like a solid business plan.
No, you know what? Cinebistro is a chain. You can actually start a franchise out in Utah if you want.
We don't even have a Waffle House out here. I'm not going to try and do something with movies if I'm feeling ambitious.
Jesus Christ. All right. The point is...
Unless you're lamenting my lack of Waffle House.
We don't have them here either, if that makes you feel better.
It just reminds me of a girl I used to do therapy with. She was lamenting that they didn't even have a Walmart where she lived. Like,
you're better off
without Walmart. We ain't got nothing where I live in Riverview. We don't even have a Walmart, which also reminds me of the kid who got high at the Waffle House. But that's none of the things to do with the movie.
Was that the kid who fell over when he thought he was a glass of orange juice and spilled?
No, this was the guy who got hit in the face with a brick, put his hand to his nose, and went, "My God, I'm a tomato."
No, this is Jeff, who we all knew got high at the Waffle House. But denied getting high at the Waffle House and didn't understand why he peed dirty. This has nothing to do with the movie. Now listen, in 2 years, the sequel to X-Men Days of Future Past will be called X-Men Apocalypse, and it will center around the oldest living mutant ever, Evan Alser, otherwise known as Apocalypse. Oh, I don't now know why what I was starting to say before I went off on the Cinebistro tangent. So I had to pee. After having a beer and then having my Coke Zero and not going to the bathroom, I was like, I can't sit here anymore. So I ran, but I didn't want to miss the scene. So I just kind of walked the aisle, and as long as I was walking and standing, not at the same time, then I was okay. I could hold it. So I'm standing in this group of, like, middle-aged people, and that's kind of like what all the theater was. It was, like, maybe, like, late 20s to, like, early 50s was the group of people that saw this movie. Again, widest possible audience. And I see this group of, like, elder guys. They're just like, oh, what's his deal? He can control concrete. I'm like, oh, God.
And then,
like a nerd, I tried to explain it to them, and they were just like, yeah, we don't care. Whatever. Just a night out. But, yes, this new movie will have Apocalypse in it, oldest living mutant, and in theory, they'll bring everybody back. Michael Fassbender, Jennifer Lawrence, James McAvoy, and whoever the hell else they want in the movie. But those are your big three.
I am looking forward to this just because I think Apocalypse is awesome.
Pat, my question to you is, and you're my expert on comic books. of all of the apocalypse stories, do you think they'll basically just sort of take the essence of what the character is in the comic books and just construct their own story, or they'll try to extrapolate one of the stories from the X-Men comic books, and if so, which one?
I find that most of his stories are way too out there to put into a movie narrative in full. And even if they did a partial job, they're going to omit so many elements to it that they'll probably maybe borrow a little bit from this story, a little bit from this story, and try to just mold it all into something of an original narrative for the movie itself. I mean, his biggest known story is Age of Apocalypse, which takes place in an alternate reality. And there's no feasible way you could do that at the moment with this franchise, especially coming off of a movie where you visited a potential alternative future. It would just be asking way too much of the audience to have to deal with that. And like I said, any story involving Apocalypse is generally very all-consuming and goes on for quite a while, so I can't see them doing anything directly inspired by the comics. I'm sure the name of the film will probably be something like Age of Apocalypse, but I don't think it'll be a direct adaptation of anything. I think you'll see a lot of little elements from each story molded into one kind of original, almost, narrative.
Robert, one of the elements of the Apocalypse character is that he creates, you know, he has four horsemen, and there's always been some sort of personal tie to the X-Men. I think Wolverine was one of the horsemen. The most infamous one was Angel, except that at this point we have no relationship to Angel, so a turn to death would be meaningless to the audience unless they spent
half of the movie
building him up. In the retconned parts of the movie.
No, like they actually mentioned that when they're on the plane in this movie, when Magneto's listing off the mutants who've been captured and experimented on and are dead, courtesy of Trask, he lists Angel.
But I thought that was a different mutant, because the Angel that I'm referring to shows up in The Last Stand and is a young man, so he's not even born
Ben
yet.
Foster playing Warren Worthington.
Yes. So again, I'm thinking a different Angel here.
More than likely, they'll go with Gambit, because Gambit was Death too. Or you could do Rogue turning to Strife. Yeah.
Well, actually, my question
to you is,
different
X-Men have been horsemen.
My question to you is, why not go a completely different direction? And here's why I'm going to say this. At this point, they've more or less established that there's an uneasy peace between Charles Xavier and Magneto, and they can't now go ahead and turn him back pure evil and all of that, because he knows that if he goes that route, he's going to endanger the future. But now that takes away one of the X-Men's greatest enemy. A possible option for a plot line for this, if, you know, I'm not sure how far into the script they are, but to the unpaid intern listening to this podcast, here's my idea. Of the Apocalypse turns Magneto into death, and that the movie revolves around trying to bring him back to himself, and that gives them the opportunity to use Magneto as a bad guy again without retreading the things that they've already dealt with.
I'm okay with that. You're asking
okay.
me.
Pat? You're sorry, Robert. Sorry.
No, I'd be okay with that, especially if Magneto doesn't have his helmet, because that's one of the things. Apocalypse is just... I don't know when they're setting this film, if they're setting it in the, you know, 70s to 80s, or if they're... That's when they're setting
it? They've already established it in the 80s.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably go with that. Go ahead and let Magneto has some, you know, darker predilections anyway, so having Apocalypse prey on them would just make perfect sense.
Well, you know, Apocalypse is one of the, you know, surviving of the fittest. So we're back to the same theme, which is, you know, mutants are superior, humans are inferior, kind of a thing. It allows the character of Apocalypse to sort of toy with Magneto, who just recently gave up that philosophy and is sort of struggling with it. And then, you know, there's Apocalypse sort of bringing it back out of again, you know, trying to bring out the monster in Magneto. I think it would be an interesting storyline.
It could also lead into Magneto killing Apocalypse, which he does in the Age of Apocalypse. He actually, like, rips him in half.
There you go. You know,
When
all else fails, Magneto reclaims his humanity, and he's the one that defeats Apocalypse. There, we just wrote the script for him. Ta-da!
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I mean,
it's getting a little bit kind of repetitive where it's, you know, Xavier kind of trying to appeal to Magneto a little bit. You know, Magnus or Eric, we need you. And I wouldn't mind seeing him as one of the horsemen if it's done right. I don't think that death is necessarily the right role for him. I think the character who you would most likely see as death in the horseman would be Wolverine. He was the death horseman in the comics at a certain point. Magneto's never been... No, Hulk was war in that same situation.
I just thought that Wolverine had been... I knew he was death. I, for some reason, thought he was war at some point as well.
No, he hasn't been war. He's been death. I could see Magneto as, like, Pestilence or something like that.
I got an idea. Yeah. All right, now watch my dance, right? So we have a thriving school in the 80s, right? An uneasy peace between Magneto and Charles. No hostilities. Mystique has sort of gone her own way, but she's not at war with the humans. Apocalypse shows up, and Mystique, Magneto, Wolverine, and fuck, who knows? And a third one.
Dazzler.
The fourth person close to Xavier all become horsemen, right? And that's when Wolverine gets his metal claws. Because, you know, Apocalypse changes people slightly, right? So,
well, he actually did rebond the adamantium to Wolverine after Magneto ripped it out.
There you go, see?
Canon.
Because since they've already retconned the whole meeting between him and Stryker, why not do a thing where Apocalypse, you know, and then that gets you Jackman in the movie well before that he would have met Charles Xavier, let him be one of the horsemen, along with Magneto and Mystique. Ta-da!
As long as you guys aren't suggesting Cable.
Oh, you gotta have Cable. Come on, he comes back.
No, you really don't.
I don't. I think that would be a bit much to introduce into the storyline.
Cable is everything that was wrong with comic books and started the most awful trend of eras in the 90s.
Wasn't Cable the son of Jean Grey and
Cyclops?
Scott?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the son of Cyclops and Madeline Pryor, who's actually a Jean Grey clone, but...
Genetically, he's still the same.
Head starting to hurt. Okay.
Yeah, sucks because I have big guns and I have a million pockets and I'm not going to wear a mask and I'm awesome because I can manipulate time and I'm the worst character that's ever been fucking written. Yeah.
Cable back when I read comics. I couldn't tell you what the hell he did.
Piece of shit.
All right, then.
Ruined comics.
We've talked about the movie. We've talked about the Age of Apocalypse. We talked about retconning 10 years worth of Fox films. Anything left to say?
Yeah. Despite my nitpicking of stupid events that have no real bearing on the narrative, this was a blast. I would absolutely agree with Mark that of all the kind of summer sci-fi comic-esque blockbusters so far, the only more fun I had at the theater was seeing Captain America. But this was excellent. Definitely reinvigorated my hope for this franchise as a whole. I'm excited to see where they go with the next film as far as using Apocalypse as the villain. Definitely interested. A ton of fun to be had. Just really well done from start to finish. When the only stuff you can find to complain is minor, you can't really be too upset with it.
Okay. Robert, I kind of took control over the podcast from you, and all apologies for that. Is there anything you, as the host, wanted to discuss, bring up, ask a question? Go, now's the time.
The only thing I suppose I want to bring up briefly is both of you. I don't know if they've cast Apocalypse yet or if they just had like a random stuntman who was there for the finale, but if you could fantasy cast the role of Apocalypse, who would you choose?
Pat?
So I guess fantasy cast the role of Apocalypse. That's tough because of his appearance being so it's not somebody who you can readily see in that kind of guise, depending on how he's done.
Well, assuming he has the armor and the technology from the Celestials, maybe they do an Ultron thing where he's mostly CGI and you just have a guy's voice. So
I would think that is probably the way they're going to go. if you're casting him, you need somebody who can really just put the fear of God into you, because that's what Apocalypse is meant for, but can also do so by being, you know, kind of brilliant. I would say like a Gary Oldman.
That was one of my thoughts. I'm trying to remember. It was a character from one of the Harry Potter movies with the deep voice. That gave me a moment. What the hell? What? Who's that character who's always yelling at Harry and he's got a deep voice? Help me out here.
You're gonna have to be more specific.
I wish I could. Damn it.
Emma Watson.
That is not necessary. You don't mean Hagrid, do you?
Emma Thompson.
No. More accurate.
Don Cleese. No. No. Alan Rickman. Jesus Christ.
He didn't have it.
I think Alan Rickman would have a good voice for Apocalypse.
Well, yeah, he's Alan Rickman.
Oh, please, God, no. Oh, you are one of them. Oh, no, Timmy, please, no.
That is one of the most unintentionally hilarious scenes in that entire movie.
That's the best scene in the entire movie.
Oh, come on.
Clay. Bill Clay.
I will not tolerate you mocking Die Hard, sir.
How about Morgan Freeman?
Who's mocking it? That's awesome.
I'm trying to
I don't
good
think
narrative
you
could do. Here.
You don't want Morgan Freeman.
James Earl Jones?
No. You know, if you're
technically
doing...
Egyptians or African, so that would make sense.
There you go.
Furthering our racist undertones for the evening.
That was clearly politically correct.
Hey, look, let me say this. The only African American I've ever met was a white Jew from Egypt.
Damon Huntsu.
What does that have to do with anything?
I was supporting
Ariel Sharon.
I'm not racist. All my friends are black. Can we get on with this?
If you just wanted a voice that could put the fear of God into you, I might go with Clint Eastwood.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Benjamin Netanyahu isn't putting the fear of God into anybody. No, I like
Ayatollah Khomeini.
Shut up! you know what? Benedict Cumberbatch, he's in everything these days.
If you just need a
really?
Voice, you could do worse. If you just need a voice, you could do worse.
I mean, he was great as Smaug. He was, like, one of the better parts of that movie.
You know, he wasn't great as Khan.
That no
was
one
a
was
terrible
great in
movie,
that movie.
Which you buried at sea. Ugh.
No one was great in that movie. That was not his fault.
It was a piece of shit after the first, maybe, like, 45 minutes.
Ricardo Montalban.
There
he's
we
dead.
Go. John. John Candy.
Tony also Randall.
Dead.
Cesar Romero.
Who is Tony Randall?
I dare you to fix this podcast, Robert Winfrey.
You know, I can't. we've gone off the rails trying to do some fantasy casting. So I'll just say, at this point in time, I think Bryan Singer has earned a degree of I'll wait and see how it turns out. Even as far as casting goes, I mean, a couple of flubs aside. So I'll
Brock Lesnar.
Remember, he has to speak.
Brock Lesnar's body with Alan Rickman's voice.
Ooh, and then we can cast Paul Heyman as Toad, and he can hop around going, my client Apocalypse conquered humanity.
What the humor?
The Fifth Horseman, J.J. Dillon.
There we go. It'll be Magneto, Mystique, Wolverine, and Ric Flair as your four horsemen.
We'll have Ole Anderson do the Black Scorpion voice for Apocalypse.
Dude, maybe Ole Anderson is the key to being Apocalypse right there. You just cast Ole Anderson. Don't dress him up at all. Just tell Ole Anderson, come to the set and film him as is.
That's just terrible.
The Apocalypse. That would be Holocaust.
This is getting silly, Robert Winfrey. Put it
just
into
okay.
It.
All right. So, in summation, we all liked the movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it. If you have seen it, see it a second time. I won't condone a third visit, but at least two.
So,
all right.
I have a question.
All right.
Now, I'm going to see Maleficent. I wanted to bring my daughter, but then I was threatened by every member of my family that she's too young and it's too scary, which I don't believe is true. But after a while, I just get tired of fighting these things. So I know I'm going to see Maleficent next, and then after that, Transformers. Pat, what are you going to see next?
I was going to see Neighbors. That doesn't really count as a summer blockbuster, but I just wanted something where I didn't have to think for about 90 minutes and could see bad things happen to Seth Rogen.
You just want to see it because Zac Efron looks like John Stamos.
Listen, he's a handsome guy. Don't hate on him. Haters are your motivators. I'm sure he's listening and he's inspired by that.
Speaking of handsome men, what happened to Rick Rico?
What was that?
I said, speaking of handsome men, whatever happened to Richard Grieco?
Drugs. Drugs and Yasmin Bleeth.
That's too bad. Are you seeing...
Not the Yasmin Bleeth part.
I was going to say the Yasmin Bleeth part.
Third time. Are you seeing either Maleficent or Transformers?
There is probably a good chance I will end up seeing Maleficent. I have no interest in Transformers, even with Dinobots and Mark Wahlberg.
All right, you'll have to let me know if you see Maleficent. Robert Winfrey, what are the next couple of movies you're going to go see?
You know, if you just want a podcast on Maleficent, I'll go see it. I was not terribly inclined to see the next Transformers because Mark Wahlberg is in it, and I've not paid to see anything with Mark Wahlberg in it since The Departed, which I did not pay to see because of him. And to anyone who knows the characters, the notion of Optimus Prime riding Grimlock it causes physical pain.
It's awesome.
If you're 13 years old and have ADD.
And it's 1986.
No,
and it's awesome.
No, Optimus Prime riding a dinosaur can be awesome to 13-year-olds of any age.
Whatever. Stupid Fast and Furious movies.
I don't like those either. Why do you bring this up? I've had to watch all that crap. And I got to, like, two decent movies at the end of it.
All right, look, just getting to the point. If you're seeing Maleficent, let me know. We'll put together a podcast date for that. If you're seeing Transformers, same thing.
When does Expendables 3 come out?
August. And that, I think, is the next date night for me and my wife. We love those movies.
How can you not love those movies? They're stupid action movies. That's all they are, stupid action movies, and they're awesome.
Goddamn, that's right. It's like riding a dinosaur. It's just a lot of fun.
I also want to see Ronda Rousey die.
All right. So if you're paying attention, the Rattlington Broadcasting Summer Blockbuster Reviews may or may not continue with the following movies: Maleficent, Transformers, Guardians of the Galaxy, which is August 1st. I don't know if I'm going to make it to the theaters to see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That one I may wait till it comes on. Yeah, okay.
I
think we're all out
on it.
All right, so we're skipping Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So, yeah, it'll be Maleficent, Transformers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and The Expendables, and I think that'll just about do it. Sound good to you?
I would rather watch, what's that movie with Dom DeLuise and Jimmy Walker where they find a monkey? What is that, Going Bananas?
Sure.
Yeah, I would rather watch that than any of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Fair enough. All right, Pat. I'm going to throw it back to you, Robert. That's our rough plan for these movies until the end of the summer. Robert,
all right,
let me say this.
If we all reach a point where we haven't seen a movie over the weekend that came out, would any of us be opposed to going back over some of the movies that we didn't get to do as they came out live?
No.
No.
What did we miss, though? We missed Captain America and Godzilla.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, if we have a week or so to kill, if nobody objects to maybe back treading over either of those.
No, I'm all for it.
Okay. That was the only other possible suggestion I had. All right. That's going to wrap us up. So, Mark, what do you got to plug?
The newest Casual Heroes WrestleCast called Oven Myths, and if you listen to it, you'll know why, is up on thecasualheroes.com. Go ahead and check that out. The featured podcast of the month here on the Rattledge Broadcasting Network is In Defense of the Big Bang Theory, and if you've been listening to us for the last hour, you'll know why I defended the Big Bang Theory. against those who would say, I'm not like those people. Anywho. Aside from that, this preempted the Metal Hammer of Doom tonight. I got a call from Robert Cooper saying that he could not get his computer to work and he would run out of time before he had to go to the work. So no Metal Hammer of Doom this week, but next week, and I'll let Robert plug it himself, will be the return of the Long Road to Ruin, his last two shows before I come back. Speaking of Transformers, do Transformers. The Michael Bay, the original Michael Bay trilogy, right after the new Transformers Age of Extinction comes out.
I heard that Jeremy Lambert had expressed interest in being your guest for those movies. Is he set for that, or is this just going to be you and Sean?
What I said to Sean was, I wasn't making any effort. That this is the schedule. This is when I'm coming back. This is the trilogy that we're doing. Why? Because I said so. I have spoken. If he wants to be on, that's his opportunity. If he can't make it or he doesn't want to do it, then, you know, tough titties.
Just curious.
So, we'll be back with Transformers and then our four-show look. Now, Sean goofed this up a little bit, so I just want to make it clear. We're doing Batman the Animated Series by volume, not by episode. By volume.
You could do it by episode. You do a 30-minute episode on each episode of the series.
It will be done the weekend that Jonas goes to college. So, no thanks. fucking show runs every other week, Winry. What's going on here? All right, so, yeah, we'll be doing a four-week, four-volume show till the end of the summer covering Batman the Animated Series, and that'll be the beginning of July. Outside of that, I don't think I have anything else. You know, I'm still on the Jonas Exodus. That's winding down. I'll be back at the end of June.
All right. Pat, apart from abandoning me, what do you have to plug?
Apart from ending my association with 411 Mania officially, you can actually go over to thecasualheroes.com and listen to my podcast as well that I co-host with Gavin Napier. We have a new edition of the Championship Roundup. We've added a new segment called Chris Asks Pat Stuff, where our good friend Chris Evans will randomly shoot about 10 questions at me and will pick my brain to see how well I can answer them off the bat. I got 8 out of 10 that he threw at me. One, because my Spanish is not up to snuff and I did not know that escapito meant shotgun. The other, because the contender I referenced was not the contender they referenced in a question, so I counted it as a wrong one. Otherwise, 8 for 8. We talk, you know, kind of about the events of the Chavez-Golovkin fall apart, we previewed the upcoming Adonis Stevenson-Andre Frampora fight and the fallout from it and the legal ramifications of his canceling a bout with Sergey Kovalev to unify the light heavyweight division. We'll have another episode this coming week, probably recorded on Thursday night for you and up by Friday morning.
All right. As Pat mentioned, he is no longer a regular panelist on the 411 Ground and Pound radio show, which goes live every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Which means for the moment, it's just me and Jeff Harris. So I have put it out there to anyone associated with 411 Mania at the moment. If you would like to become a regular panelist on the show, because I like the three-man format, I think it's probably, you know, when everything's at its most efficient, let me know. I would very much appreciate it. I like the three-man format. That's kind of where I want to go.
I endorse Alex Rella or Wyatt Bossier if you're looking for somebody.
I can't recruit them.
Wyatt can't commit to a show, though. Wyatt's all over the place and can't really commit. Maybe you can get our. I say you steal Famer back.
I don't think he's interested. That's why I can't recruit people. I can't draft them into service.
I also don't think you should ever want to try to host a show where Famer and Jeff are on the same panel.
There's a mute button there for a reason.
Yeah, it's going to get worn out within 10 minutes.
I have children to raise. Wrap this up.
All right. As Mark mentioned, next Tuesday, the 3rd of June, The Long Road to Ruin is back. I'm still hosting for a couple of more episodes. We're starting our look at the Nightmare on Elm Street series, It's myself, Sean Comer, and I believe our current plan is to have our title card artist, Benjamin J. Colon, be our special guest. We're reviving the Hellraiser. Oh, God. I forgot the word. I'm looking for not eating.
Franchise?
No. Format. Aha, I got there. The Hellraiser format, wherein we devote the first episode to the good entries into the series, and then the last episode to the bad ones in the series, instead of trying to go chronologically, because you have at least one movie between each good entry in the series. So tune in on the third, and we will be tackling all the good ones, which I believe is tentatively scheduled to be the original Nightmare on Elm Street, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and if time and inclination allows, Freddy vs. Jason.
Hey, did you see that the UFC on Fox 12 main event is Robbie Lawler versus Matt Brown for one of them, number one contenderships that they just pass out randomly?
You know, I'm not entirely convinced Johnny Hendricks isn't going to re-injure his glaive and render the whole thing moot. What is it with UFC champions and fighting once a year? It's like, okay, I'll fight four times a year to get to the title. I got the belt. Nah, once a year.
Because MMA
I believe it comes with the welterweight belt. Because it's the only welterweight champion where that happens.
The heavyweight champion.
Heavyweight and lightweight.
I hate Cain Velasquez. I hate him so much.
And Anthony Pettis. We can't forget about old Glass Knees himself.
Oh, yes. But have I mentioned how much I hate Cain Velasquez? Flames on the side of my face, heaving, seething. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, my weekly column is locked in the guillotine. It's in the MMA section of 411 Mania. It goes live every Friday. I went back and forth about what I was going to talk about this week. I finally settled on a topic, partially inspired by Pat's decision to abruptly abandon me with Jeff Harris.
That was so messed up. It's like, hi, I'm Pat Mullen. Fuck this shit. I'm out.
And I defended his point.
Do you understand how bad I would have killed that show that night if I would have stayed on?
Do you understand how that show sounded without you?
Every other word would have been, nah, I don't give a shit. Fuck this.
I would have taken it.
Who?
I would.
Never heard
I
of him.
I would have taken it.
Actually, what you should have said, Pat, was this. Oh, wait, before I do this, Robert, is there anything else you're going to plug?
Just that I was just going to illuminate. Well, I was going to mention that my column this week, I'm going to focus on not the myth, but the reality of quote-unquote high-level MMA. Because I know that's one of the reasons Pat got so frustrated with everything, and I think it bears taking a look at. So that's going to be what I'm going to be talking about this week.
There is high-level MMA. It's just not TJ Dillashaw.
So for those of you who did not hear Pat's goodbye rant on the 401 Ground and Pound radio show, we're going to say goodnight to you with Pat's last words on this Sunday night, 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, as he says goodbye to 411 and goodbye to MMA.
What I'm going to do is go back home and see what's left for me, whether it be in the cage or out of the cage. I know over the last several months, I lose a lot of things, and one of them things has been my smile. And I know it doesn't mean a whole lot to everybody else, but it means a lot to me. So I have to go back and fix myself and take care of myself, and I have to find my smile because somewhere along the line I lost it, and I don't care really. I don't care if it's unpopular, and I don't care if people want to make fun of me being an emotional guy, but this is all I ever wanted to do, and over the last few years I get to do it, and whether you like me or not, I just want to tell you that this past years was the most wonderful years of my life, and if I never get to do it again, it's going to be okay because I got to live the best years being the number one guy, and it was the single best time in my life. And I have you to thank. I have everybody here to thank, and it means a lot to me. And I'm going to go home now, okay?